Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, which is Sukkah Daf Chaf Aleph. Perhaps it would be wise to start again from the Mishnah Daf Chaf Amud Beis, beginning of the Perek, and take it from there. Says the Mishnah, Yoshin Tachas Amita B'Sukkah L'Yotzei De'Chivasa. If one chooses to sleep beneath a bed in his sukkah, he's not Yotzei, Rashi explains, because there's an oil which is Mafsik Beinoi L'Sukkah. So he doesn't relate to the sukkah. He's not Yotzei. Rabbi Yehuda, he disagrees, and he'll prove it with a story. In fact, Noyhagin Hayinu, it was our custom. Shayinu Yishenim Tachas Amita. We would sleep beneath a bed. In the presence of the skenim, and nobody said a word. Apparently, even beneath a bed is acceptable. Amar Rabbi Shimon, I'll support the Tanakama's version. In fact, there was a story, Mas a bit Tevi Avdoi Shur Rabbi Gamliel. There was a story involving Tevi, the loyal servant of Rabbi Gamliel, who was also a learned fellow. Shayyashin Tachasabita. He happened to be sleeping beneath a bed when the skenim were there. And Rabbi Gamliel turns to the skenim to praise his knowledgeable eved, Re'isim Tavi Avdi. Did you notice my slave Tavi? Shu Talmud Chacham. Look, he's a Talmud Chacham. V'yodeya shavodim paturim min asukah. And he knows full and well that an eved, just like an isha, is pater from sukkah because it's a time-related mitzvah. And an eved has the same chiyuvim as an isha. Therefore, he knows that he's pater. That's why he chose to sleep beneath a bed. And Tosis explains that this fellow Tevi was a Talmud Chacham. In fact, it means that he used to wear tefillin. But this time around, he decided to sleep beneath the bed. And Tosis explains, Shloi litchayk es chachamim, shoy yishenim besukkah. There were many guests there, many chachamim, and he wanted to make room in order to alleviate the crampiness, so he went ahead and he ended up under the bed. He didn't want to leave the sukkah because he wanted to listen in to the Divrei Torah being discussed by the Chachamim, but he knew that his pater, so he belongs under the bed. He got out of the way, and we learn from there, says the Gemara. This is Rabbi Shimon speaking. Although Rabbi Gamliel wasn't trying to teach anybody halachas, he was just speaking derech bedicha, Rashi says. He was just making a light-hearted comment, praising his eved for his expertise, for his knowledge in halacha. But, says Rabbi Shimon, l'fidro chenu l'amadu, simply listening, overhearing this discussion between Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim, we conclude that in fact, if one sleeps beneath the bed, he's not Yotze. So this is in support of the Tanakama Shita, who says Yoshin Tachas Amita. The Gemara will explain what's behind this machlekes, whether or not it constitutes a concern. Says the Gemara, what's wrong? We're sleeping beneath the bed. You don't have an airspace of 10 tefachim beneath the bed, which is the minimum requirement to create a new reshus, to create a concern. Tirgum HaShmuel, Shmuel interpreted the Mishnah to be speaking about Bemita Asor. In fact, this bed was high off the ground and featured a 10 tefach airspace. On the topic of oil, says the Gemara Tanan Hasam, we actually have a Mishnah in Maseches HaOlos discussing the concept of an oil over tumah. So if you have a roof, a tent, over something which is tummy, that oil now distributes the tumah, it spreads the tumah all throughout that roofed area. Anything found beneath that oil is tummy as well. And then we should provide some examples. Tanan hasam echad chayr shechareruhu mayim. So it need not be an oil which was man-made, even something which is a natural cavity, a natural hole. Echad chayr shechereru mayim, which was bored out by water, created some sort of cavity at the side of the river. Oish rotzim, or creatures, oish achlosser malachas. Malachas means it was a salty terrain, which got cracked, and resulted in some cavities being formed within. V'chein midbach avanim, likewise a pile of stones. So although it was piled by a person, but the chalal, the cavity found within, was not deliberately formed by a person. V'chein sovar shel kairos, or you have a pile of beams, where you found a cavity within, a chalal, and all these things are ma'ahil ala tumah, hovering over tumah. The Tanakhama maintains they function like any other oil, despite the fact that some of them are only natural occurrences, some of them were made by a person, but not deliberately to serve as a roof. Still, in all, they serve as an oil with respect to tumah, and anything found within that cavity, together with the tumah, is tummy. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says it needs to be a more prominent type of oil. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol oil sheinei osir bidei adam. Any oil which was not formed by a person, wasn't man-made, and deliberately to serve as an oil, as a roof. Eino oil. So when it comes to tumah, at least, it doesn't work because it's not chashev enough. It can't go ahead and transport the tumah from one side to the other. So it has to be man-made oil. And Rashi says in the bottom line, "Bidei adam miskaven laseise oil." It has to be done deliberately to serve as an oil. Says one of my taima, Rabbi Yehuda. What's the taim of Rabbi Yehuda, who requires that it has to be oil bidei adam with kavana? Yolif oil oil mimishkan. He applies a gzeirah shava from the mishkan. Ksiva achazois hatoyer adam kiyamas ba'oil. We find by tumas oil, where the Torah refers to it as an oil. Zois ha-Torah Adam kiyomas ba'oil, there's a mace in the oil, anything within that oil becomes tummy as well. Uksiv ha-Hasam, we find elsewhere, by the Mishkan, va-Yifrois es ha-oil ala Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu spread the oil on the Mishkan, and we learn as follows. Malahalam bidi Adam, just as the Mishkan was a man-made structure, afkan bidi Adam, likewise over here, in order for it to be considered oil, needs to be bidei adam. Now the kasha is, we all know the Medrash says, the kerushim were too heavy for Moshe Rabbeinu to actually position himself. And Hashem tells him, put your finger on it, and it's going to rise on its own. So why does the Gemara refer to it as something bidei adam, or to terutzim? One is, he initiated it. So although Hashem completed the process, but it's related to Moshe Rabbeinu's masa, second teretz is, the Gemara speaking about the oil which was pyrus on the Mishkan, the curtain, the sheet, the material, which that perhaps he did personally, as considered bidei adam. So contra Yehuda, we apply gzeirah shava, oil from tumah to Mishkan. We learn just as the Mishkan was bidei adam, the oil of tumah as well needs to be done bidei adam. V'rabbanan, how do Rabbanan respond to this gzeirah shava, oil ribo? We find in Parshas Parah, Parshas Chukas, many mentionings of the word oil to be marbi, even something which was not bidei adam. V'savar b'Yehuda kol oil she'ini asay. Bidei adam any oil, is that so? That according to B'Yehuda, unless it's a man-made oil, it doesn't work, it doesn't function as an oil. Raminu, listen to this Mishnah in Maseches Parah. Chatzeres ho'yibnuyis b'Yerushalayim. Al gabei ha'sela. They had courtyards built in Yerushalayim, which were built directly upon bedrock. And Rashi will explain for us, we're speaking about the chatzeres, which are designated for raising children to support the paraduma process. And we wanted to take all these extraordinary precautions to prevent from any possible tumah. So these chatzeres were built on bedrock, which lessened any a chance of any tumah or kever being beneath the chatzer. Not only that, v'tachteim chalal b'nei kever atohim, they were built upon cavities. They left empty spaces underneath the chatzer, just in case it's a kever atohim, a hidden, concealed kever down deep in the ground. So by creating this airspace, which is considered an oil, and putting the chatzer on top of that, that airspace, that oil would stop the tumah from spreading upward, and the chatzah would be safe and protected. Noshim ubrois, they would bring expectant women into those chatzeres, they would give birth there. So the babies were safe and secure from the moment of their birth. Umagadlois b'neim sham lapara, where they would raise their children for the sake of the paraduma. Umavien shvarim, and of course the point was to protect them from any tumah, any tumas meis, specifically tumas meis. And Rashi will bring that they would raise them until they were 7 or 8 years old, in which case they were still pre-tumas keri age. And this actually brings that at the end of the process, when they were going to take care of the parah, they would be table them, of course, just in case they touched any tumah. But the point was to protect them from any tumas meis, which requires hazar paraduma, a more complicated procedure, as well as tumas keri, which is a more severe form of tumah, tumah yotzis meguf, a self-generated tumah. So they protected them from any type of tumah that they could. And then when they were ready to bring the kids to the paraduma process, they would bring umivin shvarin, they would bring oxen. Valgaben delosis, on which they had delosis, doors, platforms positioned. So we have platforms on top of the shvarim, in order to create another layer of a barrier. We have the shoyer on top of another delos, which is an oil. Upon which they would seat these children, the koisa shlevim bideim, who were holding earthen cups, which are not mekabel tumah, of course. Higiu l'shiloyach, they arrived at the shiloyach spring near Yerushalayim. Yordul techamayim, they would descend into the water ilum, where they would fill their cups. Ba'olav yashalahem, then they would go back up onto the doors, which were on the oxen. They wouldn't actually leave the protected confines of the doors. They would stay right up there. From his position, he would lower the kli down into the water in order to stay safe from any possible concealed, hidden caver. Let's go over to Rashi, 2 lines from the top. Says Rashi, what does this term mean? Kol shem kevar tohaim betumas hatohaim shebashas. Whenever we find this lashon shas, it simply means a lashon safeku, an unknown, concealed, hidden tumah. Ketohaim shenigod, like the depths of the earth which is not revealed. Bepnei kevar tohaim, so it would have the chatzeris built on top of sela, top of solid bedrock. Bepnei kevar tohaim, says Rashi, shekol irhu misupokin, throughout the city there would always be a chance. Shema yesh shom kevar. Perhaps it's some hidden grave. And the kever does not have an airspace, a tefach airspace, in which case the mace is now sort of buried beneath the earth without any room to spread out any chalal tefach, which creates an oil. If there's no oil, then that is a tumor of shirutzutza. It's a squash tumor, because of oil, which just breaks through anything above it, even though there's lots of layers of earth and stone. It doesn't matter, because there's no airspace on the maze. The maze just breaks through l'rakia, up to the rakia. So you'll never know if you're actually stepping over a caver of this type. So to take this extra precaution to protect the children from the tumah, l'kacha yibayin oisal gabi kippin, they would go ahead and build the chatzeres on kippin, on these sort of arches. Shafilu yeshem kever mitachas harichalal mafsek, even on the slight chance that there is a kever beneath, the airspace of this dome, of this arch, would stop the tumah from spreading upward. So now the chatzar was safe. Umaviyin nashim ubrois, they would go ahead and bring the nashim, who would give birth, they would raise them in purity. Now Rashi will explain why indeed did they have to take all these extraordinary precautions, which were not halachically mandated. The Ritva says, min halacha, there's no concern of tumah. There's no grounds for suffix. But Rashi will explain the reason for this is as follows. Because actually, they did implement sort of a leniency when it comes to paraduma. And this was meant to counteract that kula, you know, to safeguard the integrity and the impression of kula, which was aroused by the following. The snan, metamen hoyu sakoyin haservice apara. Actually, they would make the para, the koyin who would take care of the para, they would make him tummy on the day of the process. Umatbil noisumayad, immediately after which they would be toivel him. Why would they do this? Lahoitzi milima shal tztukim. to undo, to refute the tzedukim. They would claim that only a kohen who's completely tar, who is tovel and experienced nightfall hair of shemesh, is suitable for paraduma. She'omrim b'mirovei hashemesh hashanasis. Only one who experienced hair of shemesh has the right to be considered fully tar and get involved with the paraduma. But the chachamim wanted to negate that opinion. We know that as long as you're tovel, you did what you could. What's up to you? What's in your ability to do, you are yoytze, you're tar enough, even without experiencing hair of shemesh, and that's already considered a tar enough to do the paraduma. So they used to be matamehim, be toivel him, and he would do the paraduma in that state of tful yom. V'kivun the tful yom kosher b'para, since a tful yom was acceptable for the para, also b'malas harbi. The antidote to that, in order to sort of reestablish the importance of doing the process by Tahara, they implemented many, many extra malis. Kadeshli zalzul bo, so people shouldn't disregard the paraduma and the Tahara required for it. Tiknu kol masa parer b'klei glolim, klei avonim, klei adama. Anything involving the paraduma would involve klei glolim, all types of utensils made of animal waste, klei avonim, earthenware, klei adama made of mud, which were not makabel tumah, shen makabel tumah. So they went to these extraordinary lengths to ensure the proper tahara of the parah, so it sends a proper message that paraduma is meant to be done completely with tahara. Not only that, as koina soifa, the koina who was involved in the strafa, is keku leprisha shivas yam, he would have to separate for 7 days. Ve'ein echa v'kahanim noigimai, nobody was able to touch him, he was separated from civilization. Kedamrin parakam at Yuma, as we learned back at the beginning of Yuma. Vamamar, not only that, we learned mazan olav kol shiva, throughout those 7 days, they would apply the paraduma efer on the kayan as well. And part of that process was as follows. V'tikn shi yutinoikas halol. These children, described in the Mishnah we just learned, were the ones who would prepare the paraduma water for the kayan for those 7 days. They would fill water upon which they would sprinkle the Efer Chatos, Efer Paraduma, and use that water for the Parah throughout the 7 days of preparation. And again, on account of this Mala and all these precautions that they took, one of which was this concept that the children involved in this process were so carefully safeguarded from any possible Tuma. As we learned, would raise them until 7 or 8 years old, not past carry, which was would ensure that they were free of any carry. Now, I saw an interesting thing that apparently this was an ongoing process because they would never know when they needed the paraduma. In fact, it's brought in Mishnayos that they actually did 7 paradumas throughout the Beis Hamikdash Hasheni, and the Mefarshim explained because it was something unique to have a red parah be born, so they took advantage and they would actually jump on the opportunity. Whenever a red parah would be born, they would actually use it for paraduma water and create another supply of paraduma water. So this was an ongoing process that the women who were lucky enough or who volunteered, it was a privilege to be part of this process, they would go ahead and give birth in this chatzar, so that their children should be zeicha to be involved in the preparation of paradum. Katinas Rashi, umivin shvar, they would bring oxen, kshiroitzim, leilcha malas mayim, chayim nashaleich, when they would have to transport the kids over to the shiloyach to fill water, they would bring oxen, v'koyser shalevim b'deyim, who would be holding these stone kelim, shakol maaseh, or yibukhle avonim, to the priest, as we just explained, that the entire process required these types of kelim. Yordu techamayim ilum. According to Tanakama, they would actually go down into the water and fill their kalim, and Rashi explains why. Why would they take a chance, leave the safety of the oxen, which were protected areas, protected from tumah? Why would they have to go down? Because the Tana holds miglu beinon. You have to actually go down and fill, manually fill the kli. That's what's required for the Efer Paraduma, as opposed to simply lowering down by means of a rope. Tosfos disagrees. He finds many halachas, many mishnah. We find all over that they would actually not need to manually fill the kli. So why would the Tanakhama tell you to do that? So Tosfos learns that this wasn't the point of Machlekes here. Tanakhama and Rabbeisi both agreed technically either way would be fine. Tanakhama felt that this was better for some reason. There's no need to actually keep him on the shore. For that short moment, it was no real chashash of tuma. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says, no, stay on top of the shore. He would actually do it from there. Perhaps there is tuma there even for that short time. Concern, stay up there and stay safe. Okay, so that's the Mishnah describing the whole event. And it's pretty clear that they would actually travel. They would travel on the oxen. But the oxen weren't enough. They would have to have the glosses on the oxen, which presented as a barrier. It was an oil to keep them protected from any possible tuma below. Says the Gemara, "Vatani Rida Aimer." Rida disagrees. He said, "Lo yhayu mevi'in dalsos." They would not use these doors. Ela shvarim, just plain oxen. Oxen with wide bellies, which on their own served as a oil to protect the kids from any possible tumor below. Okay, so that's the discussion over there in Parah. Says the one, we have a kasha now. V'ashvarim the oil she'ein aser b'dei adam hu. Oxen are certainly not man-made roofs, oils, tents. Uktani Rida Aimer lo hayu mevi'in dalsos ela shvarim. And what did Rida just say? Rather than using dalsos, they use the shvarim themselves. And the kasha is, how can you use an animal as an oil? It's not a man-made oil. Says the Gemara, "Ki Asra Avdimi." When Avdimi came, Amar Belezer, he answered in the name of Belezer as follows: "Moite Rabbi Yehuda Kamlai Egrif." Rabbi Yehuda agrees. If the oil is large enough and is prominent enough, it's larger than a tefach. It's Kamlai Egrif, like a fistful. Rashi brings it's a oversized fist. So now the oil has prominence and chashivas. Now it's different. Even if it's a naturally occurring cavity. It's not a man-made oil. It works on account of its prominence in chashivas. Rabbi Yehuda requires a man-made oil when it's a minimally sized oil, just a tefach. It has an airspace of tefach. The entire oil is just a tefach wide, for instance. But once it's an egrif, the airspace is really larger than a tefach. It's high. And the oil itself is wider than a tefach. It's an egrif. Then even Rabbi Yehuda agrees, it's considered a oil and can perform and function just like any other oil. Tanna mihachi, in fact, we have this in a brisa as well. Umayd Rabbi Yehuda, bishkifin ubenakiki aslam. All the Rabbi Yehuda mentioned earlier, that only an oil which is asubi de adam works, as opposed to something hollowed out by mayim or shratzim, but is moida when it's a large sized cavity, shkifin, a cavity which was generated by boulders which were uprooted from the side of the mountain, or kikia slime, some sort of crevices within the cliff, large-sized crevices. They're considered oil, despite the fact that they're not man-made. And therefore, these oxen are considered. Says the Gemara, but what's wrong with the doors? Very delus. The door which was on top of that ox, the Ishmokamed Greifen, it was very large in size, wide and way off the ground. Uktani, and still, what do we say? Rabbi Yehuda Omer lo hayu mevi'in dalsos ela shvarim. Now, but they use these doors only oxen, apparently, as Rashi explains. It's because placing a door on top of an ox to create a barrier is not really a proper oil. Ein derech oil b'kach. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda does not give it chashivas as an oil. Right? Just as Rabbi Yehuda required something man-made, l'shem oil, as opposed to something which is just a naturally occurring phenomenon, here as well. If it's not the way you meant to make an oil, a door sitting on an ox, that's not an oil. And even though it's large in size, so you see that size is not a substitute for prominence, for chashivas. Now, if so, why would the ox be considered an oil. So Tosis actually learns because the Gemara figures Bali Chayim are Choshev. So even though it's not Derech Oil Bekach, if we speak about Chashivas, an animal has Chashivas, and the animal itself is called an oil. And Rashi explained earlier, by the way, that the reason why the ox is called an oil because it has a shedra, a spine, which forms an oil over the body of the shoyer, and the cavity beneath the shoyer, from the shoyer to the floor, is considered the chalal of the oil. In any case, says the Gemara, if size substitutes for prominence, if once you get past the tefach, you have an egrif in size, you don't need to necessarily have an oil be the adam. If that's the case, then what's wrong with doors on the animal? So what? It's not derech oil b'kach, but it's big, it's large in size. Even Rabbi Yehuda should consider it to be an oil. Omer Abaye says, Abaye, you're right. Rabbi Yehuda would consider the door as a oil. He's not disagreeing in halacha. He's just saying, look, what do you need it for? Just use the animal itself, which is considered an oil. But certainly, a delis is an oil as well. Although it's not oil chashav, it's not derech oil, but it's large in size. And size makes up for everything else. Rava Amar, Rava says, actually, Rav did not hold of the delis, but not on account of its oil deficiency. Rather, for practical considerations. To keep the children really safe and safeguarded from any tumah. Rav Amar Lo Yivin Dlosis Kol Iker. Actually, Rav Yehuda does not hold up the Dlosis process. Why? Just keep him on the animal. Why? Shemepnei Shadati Shaltinik Gas Olof. Because once you place the kid on this wide platform, he's going to get all giddy, overconfident. Shemayotzi Roishoy Echad Me'evar V'yitam. Maybe he'll lean over the door. And he might lean over some tumtumah. So don't place him on something wide, we'll feel overconfident. Place him on this ox, which is rather narrow, and it's going to keep him in shape, keep him sitting upright, and safeguarded from any tumor. So actually, don't place him on a door, says Rava, but not because it's lacking in its oil capacity, rather because it's going to create that psychological effect, and then the kid's going to lower his guard, and might lean over v'yitameh b'keverat ohoi. In fact, we have a right to this. Tanika Vasei the Rava, Rabbi the Omer. They wouldn't use doors. Repnei shadati shaltinik gas olaf. Because when he's sitting on this comfortable place, he's going to get overconfident. Shemiyotzi roishoi. Oy echad meivora v'yitameh b'keverat ohoi. Rather, elam avin shvarim ha-mitzrin, they bring these Egyptian oxen, shekrisein ruchavis, with wide bellies, latanoi kiseishon al gabeim, on which they perched the children, v'koisish levin b'yedeim, who were holding the koisish levin. Higiu l'shiloyach, they arrived at the shiloyach. Yordu milam, they went down, they filled up the cups, v'olu, v'yoshulun al gabeim, and went back up, and sat on top of the ox. Okay. Says the Gemara. We've just concluded. According to Rabbi Yehuda, an oil is only one which is chashev, man-made, or large in size. If so, we have a kasha. Let's go back to sukkah. We learned the Mishnah that one is not meant to sit under a bed. Rabbi Yehuda says, no problem. He has a story to prove it. Under a bed is not a concern. Now, I agree a bed is not really a proper oil. It's a temporary oil. It's a kli. Comes and goes. But what about its size? There are many groifim in this bed, meaning it's wide and it's off the ground. Utnan, and we learned in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda does not consider it to be a problem. It's not an oil. But Tanar Rabbi Da'imer. No yahagi mayinu. It was our minute. Sheyushenim tachasamita. We would sleep underneath a bed. If they have skenim, the presence of skenim. And we don't consider it to be an oil. Says the Gemara in the stand. A bed is not a proper oil. But why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda consider it to be a concern on account of its size? And since the Gemara bed is different. Shani mita hoil ulagaba asuya. Keep in mind. What's a bed coming to serve? Serve as a storage area beneath it? It's coming to serve as a bed. It services the area on top. Ulagaba asuya. That's the case. we don't consider it to be an oil and it won't interfere with the sukkah. Says the Gemara, Shvarim Nani, what about those oxen? Look at Bonasuyim. They serve their top. You sit on them, you ride on them. They carry loads, packages, not meant for the space beneath them. So why would a Yehuda consider an ox as an oil? It's not man-made. So the fact that it's large in size, but it's not meant to serve the air beneath it. Why would it be different than a bed? So that's the Gemara. Okay, also Ravin, when Ravin came, Amar Belaza, he said as follows, Shani Shvarim Hoyel Meginim Alaroim. Oxen are different than a bed. Why? Because a shur is used as protection for the rain, for the shepherds. In the sunny season, on account of the sun. In the rainy season, on account of the rain. So, although its primary function is legaba, it's the top surface which is primarily used, but since it has some function beneath it as well, it serves to shield their shepherds, that is enough to give it a din of oil. And again, it's on account of its large size. So put the two together, large in size, and services somewhat as a protector, as a shield, as a shelter, is considered. Yachi mitanami. Let's go back to the bed there as well. Hoyle megina, almin alim, v'sandalim shetachteh. If even a residual use, even just a slight service beneath it is considered, here as well, it's meant to protect one's shoes, one's sandals, stored beneath the bed. So its primary function is for its top side, but at the end of the day, it services somewhat as an oil, as a protector. And why is it different than the shur? It should be considered an oil as well. So that's the kasha, really. When it comes to a bed, the Rida says, it's not meant as an oil, it's not meant as a shelter provider, it's meant to be used as a bed to lie on it. And therefore, it's not an oil. It doesn't interfere with the sukkah. When it comes to the shur, you place the children on top, protected from tumah. What's the difference? There as well. Its primary function and use is not for the air beneath it. Elamai, you'll say, sure protects, but also protects somewhat. So what's the difference between the two? Elamai Rava, I'll tell you the difference. Shani Shvarim, oxen are different. The Torah considers them to be an oil. Hoyla suin lahogin al bnei me'ayim shalahem. They're meant to protect their innards. Right there. Their backs are coming to protect, to provide shelter, to shield their innards. Shenemar oiru basu tal bisheni. Eve speaking to Hashem, Hashem, you've enclosed me with skin, with flesh. Ubatzomis begidim tisecheni. With bones and sinews, you have sheltered me. So we see that the skeletal structure of a person, and certainly an animal, Taisa says an animal is even better because the back is actually hovering above the rest of the animal, the rest of the goof of the animal. So we see that the atzamis, the skeletal structure of a person or animal, is considered schach, shield, a protector, a shelter provider. And therefore, says the Gemara, halachically, you consider a shur like an oil. A bed doesn't have that milo, and therefore it's not an oil. Rebbeinu Chaya learns, Uru Basar Tal Bisheni. What's it going to be Malbish? He says the Nefesh, that's the main element within a person. His Neshama, his Nefesh, his spiritual entity is being enclosed and covered by the Uru Basar. Okay, so that applies to a Baal Chai, but not to a bed. That's one Teretz. Yubo Yisema, another Teretz can be. What's the difference between a Shur, which is considered an oil, and a bed, which appears not to be considered an oil? We see that you can sleep beneath a bed in a sukkah. Rabbi Lutamei, says the Gemara. Truth is that a bed is considered an oil somewhat. Why does Rabbi Yehuda not concern himself with a bed in a sukkah? Because he's following his shita. The Amar Tzukkah there is kvabinen. A sukkah is meant to be a permanent structure, and it won't be negated by merely a bed, which is just a kli which comes and goes. The bed forms a temporary dwelling beneath it. The sukkah oil kvar, the sukkah is a fixed structure. And the bed, which is merely oil arai, cannot interfere or negate the sukkah, which is a fixed and permanent place of dwelling. So this teretz is that certainly something which is large in size more than a tefach, for it has an egroif, has chashivas, even if it's not a proper oil, even Rabbi Yehuda would consider it as such. And that's why the child was safe above that shur. Why then is a bed not a concern in a sukkah? Because it's oil harai, relative to the sukkah, which is oil kavah, and therefore it doesn't interfere. So then what about Rabbi Shimon? What about Rabbi Shimon Shita? The Omar Nami Sukkah Sikodiris Kvabin, Shimon back on Daf Zaino Beis, well, that his sukkah has to be fully enclosed, and has to present as a permanent structure. And what does he say in Al Mishnah? He's supporting the Tanakama Shita. You can't sleep under a bed. Apparently, because the bed was oil arai, who will nullify the oil kava? How does it do that? That's why you're right. In Bab Pligi, this is the very point of contention between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Although they both hold that a sukkah is a diras kava, but there are two perspectives here. Mar savar osa oil arai umvata oil kava. Rabbi Shimon holds, despite the fact that a sukkah is a permanent oil, the bed, which is the oil arai, can interfere, can negate. The fact is, you are under the bed. You don't relate to the sukkah. So as far as your personal location, your personal space, you're under a bed. You're not yotze. Umar sofer, as Rabbi Yehuda holds, the bed, which is merely a temporary oil, cannot come along umavato oil kva and annul and nullify and interfere and cancel out the sukkah, which is the oil kva. Look, the sukkah determines the status of the entire makam, the entire space within it. It's a sukkah. It's a permanent structure. It's a permanent dwelling. It's all considered sukkah. So even beneath the bed, which is in that makam, it's still considered within the sukkah. The sukkah sweeps into it. It draws into it anything in that airspace. So even if you're under your bed, no, you're in the sukkah. The sukkah overrides the bed. What Rabbi Shimon holds, although the sukkah is a diras kva and has the ability to determine the status of the area within it, that's true regarding the makam. But as far as the person, the gavr, if he's beneath the bed, he's not really relating properly to the sukkah. He is out of the sukkah. Sort of the sukkah has him, but he doesn't have the sukkah. So we really have three shittas, right? We have the shittas rabbanon hold that a sukkah is a diras arai, and therefore it can't really override the bed, which is also oil arai. So there's a real concern there. That's the shita of Tanakama. Under a bed within a sukkah is out of the sukkah. Rabbi Shimon holds, although the sukkah is a diras kva, and the whole makam is called sukkah, but when you're under a bed, you're out of the sukkah. That's your personal space. You don't relate. You're not basukkah's teishu. You're not relating to the sukkah to the schach. Rabbi Yehuda holds a step further. He says, once a sukkah is a diras kva, it establishes a status of the entire halal and airspace within it. It absorbs anything within it, even the fellow sleeping beneath the bed. Okay, so in summary, we learn a shita mechudeshes, or Yehuda shita, that you need an oil choshev for it to be considered an oil, to function as an oil. Therefore, he says, when it comes to oil regarding tumah, if it's bidei adam, then, meaning if it's a tefach, it needs to be bidei adam. If it's larger than that, if it's an egroif in size, that has chashivas on its own, and even bidei shemaim is acceptable. We continue with the Gemara regarding the para, the whole process, and at the end of the day, we had a kash as follows. We compared the shivarim, which according to Rabbi Yehuda, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, were considered an oil, as opposed to a mita, which didn't appear to pose any concern in a sukkah. And the question was, why? The chayr, both are very similar. They're both made legabon. The place of use is on top of the shur, on top of the mita. It's not really intended to provide shade and protection beneath. So why is the shur considered an oil and not a mita? We have two terutz, Blazer says. Because the shur is Megan on the Roya, it protects the Roya from the elements, as opposed to the Mita, which, although it's going to protect the shoes and sandals, but a Mita in relation to a Sukkah has no value. Because a Mita is Oil Arai, It's not going to be mevatel the sukkah, which is oil kva. Rabba's approach was, shvarim are unique. Animals are unique. The Torah considers the skeletal structure of an animal to be a schach. So he's a walking oil. He's inherently valuable. He's considered an oil on its own. And therefore, we consider a shur to be an oil and protects the kid who's sitting on top of it as opposed to a bed which does not have that quality. Continues the Gemara. So Rav Shimon brought a raya from the story with the servant of Rabban Gamliel. Tanya Om Rav Shimon, Misi Chosei Shal Rabban Gamliel, Lomadnu Shnei Dvarim. Actually, we learned two things. From merely listening in to the discussion between Rabban Gamliel and the Zkenim. What are the two things? Lomadnu Shavadim Tumna Sukkah. We know that an Eved is Potter from Sukkah. It's pretty clear. And the Chiddush is, Tais asks, what's the Chiddush? We all know that a mitzvah Saseh Shazman Grama applies only to Anoshim and not Noshim and not to Avadim. He says, because by sukkah it says teishu kein taduri, meant to sit in the sukkah in a way which resembles your ordinary dwelling, perhaps even an isha is included. We learn from Gamliel it's not so. An isha is exempt, and so is an eved. That's number one. Number two, v'lo manu shayosh and tachas amita loyos dechavase. If one sleeps beneath the bed, he's not yoytze. So Reb Shimon is pointing out that there were two halachas learned from the sicha of Reb Gamliel. Says the Gemara, why does Reb Shimon choose to describe it as Sichosai Shiram Gamliel as opposed to Midvarov Shiram Gamliel? Vilema Midvarov Shiram Gamliel. Why does Rav Shimon refer to it as Sicha? Says the Gemara, there's a lesson in that as well. Musak of Urcha Kamash Malon. Rav Shimon is trying to teach us something. He's trying to teach us that not only when a Talmud Chacham is learning and teaching, do you learn halachas from him? But even merely listening into a casual conversation can produce lessons in halacha and musar and derech eretz. And that's why Reb Shimon refers to Rabban Gamliel as misichosa, rather than midvarav, which would indicate halachas that he was trying to teach. No, misichosa, just listening into the casual discussion, the light-hearted remarks made by Rabban Gamliel and praising his Eved Tavi, just from that alone we can learn halachas. So really it's a lesson on top of a lesson. The fact that Rav Shimon uses the word sicha, that in itself is a lesson. That he meant to pay attention to words of Chachamim. Ki ha de Omer of Achabar Adam. Ve'amil Asam say was the Omer of Achabar Adam. Omer Rav. Minayin shafilu sicha Tamit Chacham Tzvichalim. How do we know that even just casual conversations between Tamit Chachamim are some things which are meant to be learned from and paid attention to. Shenema v'aleu le'yiboil, even the ala, leaf, something which is just lacking value, just a leaf, le'yiboil won't wither. And the lesson here is that even a sicha of a Talmud Chacham has value and importance from which we can learn halachis, and if we analyze it closely, we can learn derech eretz and midos tavis. Continues the Mishnah. Ha'soymech sukasei b'kari amit. He has a bed with posts, and only has a schach without any walls. He's going to support his schach on that bed. So the bed is providing a double function, supporting a schach and also providing shelter. It's providing enclosure, walls for the sukkah. Sure, that's fine. Rabbi Yehuda, no, im einu yichoy lelaben fnei atzma psul. The schach can't support itself without the bed. It's pasul. My time with Rabbi Yehuda. What's wrong? Says the Gemara. We have two pshata. Pligibo. Rabbi Zeru, Rabbi Abba Bar Mamu. We have a discussion between these two. Each one provides his reason. Chad Amar, Ibn Shein Lo Kva. One of them maintained, the reason is because it's a mobile sukkah. Sukkah on a bed? That's not a sukkah. And Rabbi Yehuda requires Diras Kva. That's a problem. Chad Amar, the other one explained, Ibn Shein Amida, B'davar Mekabel Tuma, because you realize he's positioning a schach on a bed which is Mekabel Tuma. And just as a schach cannot be a kli which is mekabel tumah, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, its supports cannot be davar mekabel tumah as well. Let's go over to Rashi here. Rashi is around 14 lines from the bottom, beginning with Gemara. She'en lekva shemetal talos ademita. The sukkah is a mobile sukkah, right? Rabbi Yehuda Tamei, the Amar Sukkah, there is Kvabina. You have to have a fixed dwelling. That's one pshat. Other pshat is Shema Amida. He's supporting it with Adava Mekabel Tuma, says Rashi. Although, up until this point in the Gemara, we never had a source for anything other than the Schach itself. Here it's not the Schach, which is Mekabel Tuma. It's only the supporters. Hoyl v'ikarish ha-schach elu ma'amidim. Says Rashi, since the ikar of the schach are these ma'amidim, can't stand without them. Havik ilu sichich b'davam kabotum. We consider it as though he's actually being mesachich with something which is mekabotum. Without the poles, without the supports, without the bed, you have nothing. What is schach? Something which provides shelter and coverage, great shade. Without poles supporting it, nothing's going to happen. So the ma'amidim are considered part and parcel of the schach. And if it's a bed, it's puzzle. From Rashi, it's actually mashma that it's been atoira. The ma'amidim are considered part of the schach. Other Rishonim disagree. They say that it's only midrabbanan because it's not schach itself. There's a concern that if the ma'amidim are mekabel tuma, this might lead to confusion. Next time, you might use the davar mekabel tuma for schach itself. So it's only midrabbanan nafkamina would be the following case. We actually had a Mishnah back on the Yud Beis Amud Aleph regarding using bundles. The Mishnah says you can't use them for schach, the Xeris Tikra, because you might actually use bundles to replace for drying, not for sale, right? But you can use them, the chulon sharon l'tfon, you can use them for walls. So, if the pshat that a mamid is considered part of the schach min ha-tira, which is Rashi pshat, if that's the case, you can't use bundles for walls. What does the Mishnah mean? At the kasha for tfanis, Farshim say, we're speaking that he's using them as walls, but not to support a schach. The schach is somehow getting supported otherwise. Whereas according to the other Rishonim, that imamid is not really part of the schach, it's only on account of the schach, it might lead to the schach being puzzle. Well, if it's just bundles, which aren't really mekabel tumah, it's just a gzera midrabbanan, don't use them because it might lead to something inappropriate, it's a gzera, and we don't apply a double gzera, right? Gzera is never applied. So since the whole concept of a mamid of schach is only midrabbanan, you can use something which is merely possible midrabbanan as a mamid. Okay, getting back to the Gemara. So we have two pshatim with the regarding the psul of the schach on a bed, either because it's mobile or because it's being supported by a kli which is mekabel tumah. And Tosis actually points out that all agree. There's no machlekes that a sukkah needs to be kva, certainly according to Rabbi Yehuda. So the reason of kva is agreed upon by all. Both these shittas in the Gemara agree that there is a problem with something which is not kavua. The other shita is merely adding this additional element as well, even if it's kavua. But if it's something which is mamid, davar mekabel tumah, that's a concern as well. Interesting point that Tosfos writes here, that the concept of kavua applies even if it's on top of a agol, on top of a wagon, since it's moving around, it's not called kavua. But Tosfos, listen to this, if you put a sukkah on a ship, on a sfina, it's okay, even though the sfina is running around. Avagal dim tal telas, Tosfos says, it's urcha bahochi b'chashiva kva. It's the way it's meant to be. Ship is meant to float on water and move around. That's called kavua. And would be kosh even contribute. Okay, continues the Gemara. Might be now, is there any difference between the two shittas? Is there any halachic difference between the psul of kavua and the psul of mamid b'davar mekabel tumah? Says the mother is kigon shenot shvudin shel barzel. Suppose he positioned some metal rods on the ground v'sich aleim and put a schach on them. So now he's merely using the bed for his walls, but the schach is standing independent of the bed on those rods. Oh, l'man damar v'she'in l'kva, the one that applied the svara of kva, that's only if it's on a bed which is mobile. Harish l'kva, in this case, it's positioned on rods which aren't going anywhere. So schach is kva. L'man damar v'she'in l'kva, midah b'davar m'kva tuma, the other shita who says that the problem is because he's supporting it with something inappropriate, in this case as well, harayim amidah b'davar m'kva tuma. He's supporting a schach using rods, which are mekabel tumah, so it's possible. So that's nafkamina. If it's directly on the bed, all agree it's a problem, either because it's mobile or because he's supporting it with a bed. But if he places his schach on separate rods on the ground and merely uses his bed for walls, then we have nafkamina. Kavua, it's kavua because the schach is kavua, and that's the ikar component of your sukkah. The schach has to be kavua. But if there's a psul of mamid, well, the rods which are being mamid, yuschach, are pasul paschach, yusuk is pasul. Amar Abaye. I'm going to give you an example, a case where, according to all shitas, you're okay. Schach with a bed, and you're okay. How? Loi shanu, this whole concern is only said, ela samach, if he actually supported his schach on that bed. Aval sichach agav hamita kshira. However, if he supports his schach using wooden rods, wooden posts, which are kasha paschach, and he's merely using the bed to serve as a wall, as a doifen, then you're okay. Why? My time of one. Lamanda amar vishen lo keva. According to the sheet of keva, harayish lo keva. Now the sukkah is perfectly stationary and still. It's being supported, the schach is being supported by fixed posts. Lamanda amar vishen amida. But davam kabotuma. According to the sheet of kabotuma, well, that doesn't apply here as well. Harayin mamida, but davam kabotuma. Since he's using wooden rods to support his schach, it's okay. He's not being mamid with something to the kabotuma. Okay, so summation. We had a discussion revolving around Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda's sheet in the Mishnah, who doesn't allow placing sach on a bed. We had three cases. If the sach is directly on that bed, it's possible for either one of two reasons. Either because ain lo kva, the bed is mobile, so is the sukkah, or because he be mamed his sach bedavar makabotum, which is the bed. Now, in a case where he positioned his schach not on the bed, rather on shvudin shel barzel, on metal rods. Well, according to the shita of keva, here it's kasha. Schach is fixed in position. According to the shita, that the psul is because mamed bedavar makabotuma. In this case, it's possible because the shvudin shel barzel supporting schach on makabotuma. Rabbi concludes with a case which is kasha lekuli alma. He puts his schach on wooden posts, and he uses the bed for his doifen. In this case, it's certainly kosher, because there's no concern of kvius. Schach is permanently in place. It's sitting on the kanam shleitz, which are planted in the ground. And mamid b'davar kamatuba doesn't apply because we're speaking about wooden rods, in which case, they're not makabotuba, they're kosher for schach. So yisukah is kosher. No time for a brief chazar of today's daf. We began with the Mishnah. We had three sheets. Tanakama maintains, if one is Yashin Tachas Amita, he's not Yaitse. Rabbi says he's Yaitse, and Rabbi Shimon holds he's not Yaitse as well. And the Gemara, according to one approach, learned as follows. Tanakama holds, Sukkah is Diras Arai. Any bed which is an oil Arai can interfere with your Sukkah. Rabbi maintains, Sukkah is Diras Kva. Bed which is merely Arai cannot interfere. You're sort of swept into the Sukkah because of its permanence. Rabbi Shimon, although he holds sukkah as kva, however, if one happens to be found beneath a bed which is in that sukkah, he doesn't relate to the sukkah. He is out of the sukkah, and he's not yetz. We proceeded with the machlokes between Rabbanan, who hold that even a naturally occurring cavity is considered an oil, which Rabbi Yehuda says it needs to be a man-made cavity to give it chashivus. The Gemara concluded, if it's only a tefach in size, then it has to be made by the adam. If it's already an egg, that has chashivas, and the fact that it's larger in size allows it to be even a naturally occurring cavity, and it's considered an oil. Concluded with a disparity between shvarim, between these oxen, where according to Rabbi Yehuda, will consider an oil as well, as opposed to the mita in the sukkah, which is not. Rabbi Lezer's approach was, well, the shur is meant to protect the roya hiding beneath him, whereas the mita, although it protects the shoes and sandals, but in relation to the sukkah, it doesn't really have chashiva, since the mita is an oil arai, it's not going to be mevatel, not going to interfere with the sukkah, which is considered an oil kava. Rava's approach was, a shur is very different. Pasuk describes it as a schach, as an oil, but some is vegidim, tis soichicheni, that gives it added chashivas, which a bed doesn't have. We learned three things from that incident with Tevi. We learned firstly that an eved is potter from sukkah, beneath a bed is not yotze, and that sicha of Talmid Chacham has value and should be analyzed closely. We concluded with a machlokes between Tanakam, who allows schach to be placed on one's bed, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. And the Gemara provides two possible reasons, either because it has no kavias, it's just mobile, or because he's supporting b'davam kabotuma. Nafkamina would be placing the schach on metal rods. It has kvias, that would be kosher, whereas the coin to the Tama, Mamun Kabotuma, here as well, it's pasul. Concluded with Abaye's case, that he's placing a schach on Kanim Shal Eitz. Here, both concerns don't apply. Number one, it's permanent. Number two, the supports are kosher for schach, and they're not being mamid, but davam kabbal tumah. Kol tov to you and atzlacha rabba.